You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Hi everyone, I hope you're all well. I've got a really lovely guest today that I'm really looking forward to having a chat to and a cup of tea with. You'll mostly know her, I would think, from her years on EastEnders. She played the wonderful Angie Watts. She's a wonderful actress and a really, really nice lady. And her name is Anita Dobson. Anita, hello.
Hello there, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Just getting a bit chilly now, isn't it?
Autumn's
it's quite
coming.
Nice.
Yeah.
Mm. I love autumn because I love all the, you know, when we drive down to the countryside, all the trees changing colour. It's so lovely.
Mm. I don't like winter. Season.
No, you're like my daughter. I saw her last, I mean, she's grown up. She said, I hate winter. I hate being cold. But I don't mind, I don't think. I mean, we lived in California for a few years, many years ago. And you don't really get big seasons there. And I kind of miss them.
Mm, yeah. But yeah, if we could just go at spring, summer, autumn, and then segue back into spring again. That would be marvellous.
I do agree. We better not move to Canada or Alaska. I couldn't cope with that.
No.
Oh, my God. Or the Nordic countries where it's dark.
Although I have to say, if you do go to, say, Lapland or somewhere like that, or Antarctica, that it's a different kind of cold. It's a kind of powdery cold. So as long as you've got lots of bulk on, actually, it's not that damp, wet cold that
we get. I say it's dry, isn't it?
Yes.
It's very dry. We get damp, wet cold.
Yeah.
We won't do that. Anyway, are you a tea drinker? Are you, as we're having tea together?
Coffee, really. I'm really a coffee queen. Yeah, because I don't drink milk very much. So.
Oh, okay. So you have it black?
Black,
strong,
with honey.
Oh, that's interesting. I haven't had that one before. Not coffee. Although I don't drink coffee because it gives me kind of heartburn.
Oh, okay.
Although my daughter, again, she told me last week that she read that coffee, a couple of cups of coffee, is really good for your heart.
Yes, apparently so. Oh. Yeah, as is a glass of red wine. So I hear.
Well, I'll go with the red wine. Any day. I was looking at your biog and you were on TV a few years ago playing Queen Elizabeth I and you were bloody brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And I have to tell you, I couldn't see it in your biog. I think you've missed it out. Oh, you should put it in.
Sorry. I'll talk to my agent.
It's on Wikipedia. On the Wikipedia one,
you can't rely on those. So that,
but get it in there because you were amazing, absolutely amazing. Was it fun?
It was a wonderful part. Yeah. What about the teeth?
I'm surprised you didn't keep them. What did they?
Put...
You got them in a jar.
I have a little memento. Oh, funny.
So they clipped onto your teeth, did
yes.
they? They didn't actually paint or do your teeth. They put on false ones, so to speak.
That's correct. I went to a place called Fangs to have the teeth made.
And that's hysterical.
And there were lots of teeth on display of, like, famous horror films and people that were famously wore sort of, like, proper fangs, you know, and normal kind of nasty looking teeth, one of which was mine. But I mean, it was what a gift of a part. The makeup took 4 hours. And she said to me, as it was only a short little recording that we did, a little bit of filming, she said, we're fine. You can come in. It will take 4 hours. Then you're done for the day. She said, but if we were doing longer, like if this was a 3-month shoot, we would ask you to cut your hair off right short, because otherwise it would just take too long. She said, but as it's not every day you're needed to look like her when she's going
like
to
this.
Bed. Yeah, horrible, balding with a little tuft. It was amazing.
It was brilliant. I have to say, I do think the British makeup and hair in film and TV are the best in the world.
Yeah.
They are superb. But you, the performance was amazing. Lee and I absolutely loved it. I mean, we love historical things anyway, but it was just lovely to see your performance. So congratulations.
When
was that? It was a few years back.
Yeah. Now I don't need the makeup. I could just get
I don't think so. But the teeth still look good.
Yeah, the teeth are good. Oh, funny.
Were they uncomfortable, or was it like wearing a kind of a thing that you put teeth
like a brace? They were uncomfortable because I felt that if you didn't enunciate quite clearly, you ran the risk of lisping.
I was going to say, because those things that they put teeth whitening in, you do tend to lisp.
Yes,
I had to have a brace a few years back because one of my teeth had kind of started to grow backwards.
Ooh.
And I noticed when I wore it at night, I only had to wear it at night, and they straightened it up, but that it did make you lisp a little bit. So you do have to be careful.
Yeah. Although I have to say, I do love prosthetics. I mean, I loved the whole procedure of like having a bald pate. They had to get rid of all my hair, put the bald pate on, so I looked completely bald. And I was quite surprised I looked all right bald. It was quite surprising. And then they put the stuff on top of that. So she looked like her hair's falling out with just little tufts hanging down. And they do this thing where they put this glycerine on your skin, and then they hold it, squeeze it together in their fingers and hold it for a few moments. Then when they let it go, you have, voila, even more wrinkles than you had before. So I had
Is that how they do
it's
it?
Really
amazing.
Clever. It's extraordinary. And then they painted liver spots all over me. I mean, girlfriend, it was a blast.
That's so funny. Anyway, you were brilliant. And I'm sure it will pop up again if anyone sees. Well, it was Armada, wasn't it called?
Yes.
Yeah, it was a docudrama, correct?
That's correct, yes. That's
it was fabulous. No, I loved it. I absolutely loved
it.
So obviously, we've got to talk about EastEnders.
Yes.
You must be so sick of talking about EastEnders. But, what a stamp you put on the country. I mean, it must have been. Was it a surprise that you became? I mean, because lots of people go into soap dramas that go on for a long time, and you kind of know them and a bit, but you don't. But I mean, it turned you really famous, didn't it? I mean,
well, yes, I was just a jobbing actress before that, and then suddenly it was brand new. Then they were talking about it as a drama series, and. And I wasn't cast originally. I don't know if you knew that. They cast somebody else as Angie Watts.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, and she'd started filming those little trailers that they put out. And then at the final, like penultimate hour, Julia Smith, the producer, the executive producer, decided she wasn't right for whatever reason. And so they let her go. And then the search was on to find Angie Watts. So, because my agent did put me up originally, and they said, no, she doesn't look old enough. So this time they put me up again, and I'd obviously aged sufficiently. I don't know what.
In six months.
But what I had done was as I say, jobbing actress, no money. And so I went on a tour with the Oxford Playhouse Company of Henry IV, Part Two. Sounds a bit shushy, doesn't it? And my mum and dad said to me, look, you're not going to get married. And, time is running out, darling. So here's what we'd saved for your wedding. It wasn't that much in those days. I think it's £100 all those years ago. And they said, for God's sake, get yourself some decent clothes. So while I was on So while I was on tour, I went around all these little thrift shops and bought myself little 40 suits for about £6 and coats and blouses. And so, and then I went on tour with the Rocky Horror Show to Italy. And I met this lovely girl called Gianna, whose mother owned a hairdressing salon. And she kept saying to me, darling, you must, the gel, everybody, gel the air, you got the gel. So I thought, okay, I'll gel. So when I walked in for the... interview, just to the first interview for Angie, I had a 40 suit on, tailored little suit, very wasted, and my hair was gelled. And the first thing she said was, now that's a good style. It's a good look. And I thought, oh, that's good. So that was a good start. So after that, as you probably remember, she wore lots of little tailored suits with the dicky bows and the hair.
So you actually were way ahead of the trend of shopping in thrift shops.
I was.
Because now it's because it's like it's so trendy to, you know, recycle, which we all have got to do. But I mean, in those days, way ahead of the trend. I used to go because I actually love 1940s jackets because I love the shape, you know, the shoulders. Yeah. So I actually did used to go looking for jackets.
Well, I love vintage. I mean, my mother was a tailoress. My father was a dress cutter. So I love clothes. And so anything like Armado and with the costumes, I love it. But when I went shopping, I mean, they're the sort of things that I would wear. I love the 40s. It's my favourite period too.
Me too.
And they looked so smart, didn't they? We had gloves and handbags and little knickers.
And they always wore a little hat.
Yeah, tilted on one side, yeah.
I know. It was gorgeous.
So that's how I suppose that helped a lot towards them. And when I left the interview. She said, off you go home, she said, because we have other people to see, but we'll ring you this afternoon and let you know what's going on. So I left with clutching 6 scripts, which weighed a ton, and staggered out into the rain because it was raining, thinking, have I got the job? Oh, what's all this about? And then the car broke down on the way home. My beaten up Vauxhall Cavalier broke down. So I had to get a cab. So I got home wet, without the car, with all these scripts, went in, plonked them down, and the phone went, and my agent said, well, it looks like you're playing Angie Watts if you want to.
Wow.
And I said to him, I said, can I call you back? And he went, okay. So I rang my dad and I said, Dad, I've just been offered this part and blurbed away. And he went, why are you on the phone to me? Get off the phone. This is what you've been waiting for.
Oh, wow. Isn't it? I love stories. Like, it's so amazing to me that one meeting, one, you know, chance meeting or somebody seeing, you know, it's like Patrick Stewart, who was in Star Trek, got the job because he was at he was lecturing at a university about acting, about various things. And one of the students' fathers was a producer of Star Trek and he saw him and cast him.
Wow.
In Star Trek and changed his life. I mean, he was a jobbing actor, very, very good actor.
Yeah.
But that turned him into a major star. Isn't that amazing?
Extraordinary.
And the same with you. I mean, the fact that you got your hair gelled up and the 40s.
Yeah, God bless Gianna, wherever she is now.
I know. But it made such an impact on everyone in I mean, I used to watch it all the time in those years because they were such great storylines and your storyline was amazing. I was amazed to read in your biography that it was only 3 years.
Yeah, I did.
Is that true?
Well, the initial contract was 18 months.
Yeah.
And then they said, we'd like you to come back. And I said, can I come back for another year? And they said, no, it's 2 years or nothing, either 2 years or no. So I said, all right, I'll do the 2 years. So I did three and three quarter years, whatever, yeah. 3.5 years, yeah.
But it's still the major storyline that everyone thinks of when you say EastEnders, isn't it? Don't you think?
Yeah. And,
it is.
And I think you're right. You see, when you said about the storylines, the writers in those early days were fantastic.
Yeah,
and once we sort of clicked, Leslie and I, they started to kind of write for us. They realised what kind of chemistry was going on. So they started to write for us. So that's, I think, what actually compounded the whole thing. It made it suddenly very watchable.
It was it was addictive. I don't know about just watchable. Yeah. You had to tune in to see what was going to happen. Yeah. But tell me, because I bet a lot of, I mean, I only know because I know other people who've done that sort of schedule. It's quite hard, isn't it? Because you've got scripts coming along all the time. And in those days, how was it every night, EastEnders, or was it once a week? I can't remember.
It was twice a week. And then wonderful Sandy Ratcliffe, who bless her, not with us anymore, but we made her equity dip because she could earn a little bit more money and she was a bit hard up, bless her. So she became equity dip and she went in and struck a really tough deal with the management. So that when the omnibus was shown on Sundays, we got a really good kickback from that. So that made it a decent fee after that, yeah. But no, so it was shown twice in the week and then repeated on the Sunday. But we didn't have rehearsed record, of course, in those days, which actually I attribute to one of the reasons why it was so good, because Julia insisted. So we would rehearse, we would have all day on the Tuesday, we'd rehearse all day, stop, have lunch or dinner, whatever you want to call it, and then we'd come back and then we'd record all evening, and then we'd do the same thing on the Thursday. Friday we'd do all the filming on the lot. Saturday we got our new scripts and did a sort of walkthrough, and then on the Monday we did a producer's run. So it was a busy week.
Absolutely. And learning all those new scripts week after week, but it must really train your brain.
Well, it did then. I don't know about now. my one grey cell that I've got left, I'm sort of nurturing to try and keep it going.
So you were actually born in the East End, right?
Yes, I was in Stepney.
Is that right? Stepney. That's amazing. I never knew that. That's amazing. So, and you know, we're the same age. We're born in 1949, right?
Good year. When are you born? What month are you born?
September 19th.
I'm April.
What are you?
April, yeah.
Oh, so you're a little bit older than me. But so you grew up in Stepney.
I did. Yeah, I was born and
with your mum and dad. Did you have sisters, brothers?
I've got one sister who's 9 years younger than me. And we were in a strange moment. Now, looking at the world today and looking back to the world that we lived in then when we were young, I mean, I always thought, because we were very poor, we had no money, we lived in a little council flat and relied on my dad's salary, you know, as a dress cutter. But we were very lucky because we were very protected, my sister and I. My mum and dad, like, you know, when I was older, when I was, you know, growing up to be a teenager, I still had to be in at a certain time. And if I wasn't in, my dad would be out looking for me, you know, wondering where I was. And now I'm glad it was like that, you know, even though it took me a long time to kind of grow into. I feel I didn't wake up till 37, really. I was living in this kind of protected world, and then drama took over, and then suddenly.
But it was a gentler world then, because we grew up in the same. I mean, I was in Northwest London, in Neasden, which is near Wembley. So, but it was. I mean, it was a happy childhood, really, but it was a gentler world, I think. Or maybe is that nostalgia, do you think?
Well, maybe it is a bit of nostalgia, but it was a happy world because there wasn't all this technology, was there? I mean, children played out on their bicycles, they played together, you know, they weren't kind of kept indoors, you know, you don't go outside because you might get stabbed, all this sort of thing. I think you're right, it was a gentler world. I remember where I lived, we were in a four-block kind of concrete jungle, two blocks facing each other with a playground in the middle. And people used to, if somebody was working, as the mothers did, do part-time jobs, and the children came home from school, they'd leave the keys through the letterbox on a string so that the children could let themselves in. Or a neighbour would take them in, give them tea and deliver them back. You know, it was a much more... of a community, I think.
I'd say it was a community. Yeah, we lived in a house. My dad had quite a good job. He was a master carpenter and he worked on the film sets, funny enough. And I had two elder sisters. But we played in the street.
Yeah.
I had all my friends' various houses up the street and we'd all go out in the summertime anyway, or go into each other's houses or our back gardens.
Yeah, happy day.
And again, I don't ever remember feeling unsafe or mum and dad kind of saying you know be careful because it's dangerous out there. I don't remember that.
I do remember.
I mean, there were incidents that happened occasionally, but nothing.
But I do remember my mum used, because do you remember the ice cream van that used to come round?
Oh yeah.
And then all you could hear was mum. sung from every child. You know, man, everybody's screaming. And then the mothers would throw the money over the top of the flats so it would fall down and the kids would go and get the ice cream.
That's hysterical.
I know, mad, isn't it? But I do remember my mum saying to me, don't talk to strangers. If a car stops and somebody asks you, don't talk to anybody.
So yeah, that's true.
That, I did have that. Don't talk to anybody. Mind you, my mother was quite protective, really. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Were you a mod?
I was a mod, yes.
Yeah, I was a mod too.
Do you remember there was a lot of... Because as I say, my mum was a tailor, so we had all our clothes made for us. So even though we were poor as church mice, we looked great because my mother used to get cuts from my daddy when he was working. We'd cut these huge swathes.
Brilliant.
And he'd bring some material on, and mum would make... like a little suit for me or a little dress for my sister, you know. So I looked pretty cool. Like, remember those long jackets with the slit up the back and then it had the two slits up the back?
And it was so important. I was only allowed to go out on a Saturday night. I mean, this is when I'm like 14, 15.
I thought you were going to say 40.
No, I wasn't locked up till then. But and we used to go to a club in Harrow on the Hill. Harrow on the Hill. Which to me was very posh, and it was a club above Burton's Tailoring shop, and it was all mods. It was amazing, and we saw people like the Yardbirds, which was Eric Clapton, it was unbelievable. Jeff Beck, I think, were in the Yardbirds. I mean, you know, they were just musicians to us. They weren't famous then. Eric Burden and the Animals.
Oh,
Do you remember them?
Yeah.
And we saw Georgie Fame.
Loved George. Still do. Love Georgie Fame. Love it.
But I can remember there were girls probably of 17 and 18, which to us were like, they were so grown up. And we used to see what they were wearing every week. And then I'd learned to sew from my sisters mainly and my mum. And we'd go and buy a bit of cheap fabric and make a skirt or a jacket similar to what we'd seen the other girls wearing.
Wow, so I envy you. I was absolutely useless at any kind of needlework or stuff. Same as my nan. My nan was the same. Just couldn't sew.
And yet your mum was a seamstress.
Yes, and a brilliant one too.
That's weird.
She used to make coats, you know. I remember once, one Christmas, she made me this beautiful red and black sort of boucle coat with a little scarf that went across the collar with black fringing on and a big shiny red black button. And she said, we've got to go and find shoes. So off we went down the market and we were out all afternoon. I was exhausted. I said, Mum, I don't care. I'll wear the shoes I've got. I'm not bothered. She said, nope, we need the right shoes. And eventually we found, really quite late, must have been about 5 o'clock, this stall down the market with a pair of black patent shoes with a big bow on the front. And she went, look at those. And I went, I love them. She said, there you go. Those are the shoes. Happy time.
That's so fun. Oh, that's so funny because I mean, my mum did sew because she used to make, I used to get a new summer dress every summer. One that she'd make, and then she'd let me pick one. Did you have catalogues?
Oh, my mum, yes, my father used to bring home the big ones, you know, from because he worked at a big firm. So he'd bring the catalogues, and there was the end, like the front, and they'd open like that. I mean, they were literally that thick because on each page was a charcoal sketch of the dress, and then a piece of fabric of the cloth. So
the real stuff. Yeah. These were just like catalogues, and I was allowed to pick one dress. Which was very exciting every year.
It is, isn't it? I love clothes. They're so exciting.
I know. It's all, in a way, it was more exciting than now when, you know, you kind of have so much.
That's true.
And you suddenly, the excitement kind of, I mean, I still, I love shopping, but that great thrill that I felt when I was young, when you only had one or two things.
Yeah. But, isn't it interesting? I think for children now, I think they're so grown up so quickly, aren't they? I mean, Bri's got, you know, grandchildren. He's two boys, Daniel and Jack. They're so forward, you know, in their knowledge of technology.
Unbelievable, aren't they?
I think it's really important to have firsts. You know, I mean, I'm still having a first. Like, oh, I've never done that. That's really exciting. And I think if you grow up too quickly, you run out of firsts, don't you?
Yeah, you do, actually. That's really interesting. I mean, I have such mixed feelings about technology and the internet. I mean, there's obviously the good side of it, the wonderment of it. I mean, it still makes me amazed what you can do. Mm. Well, not what I can do, because most of it I can't do, but I'm learning. I'm better than I used to be. But then there's the downside, I think. I mean, we were in a restaurant a few months ago, and Lee, you know Lee, my husband, he said, I'm going to go to, there was a couple, a young couple, probably in their early 20s, sitting at a table with wine, and they were both on their phones. They weren't talking to each other. And he said, I'm going to go over there and say to them, put your phones down and talk to them. I said, you can't do that.
Did he?
But it's worrying. No,
good point.
No, he wanted to. Yeah. And there's a few restaurants I've heard now who they won't allow phones in.
That's great. I don't think you should.
I think that's a brilliant
idea.
At
least when you're eating food, for goodness sake, turn the damn thing off for a moment.
But I do think, I don't know, and the downside of it, all the horrible things that children can find on the internet is very, very worrying.
Yeah. Horrible. Really horrible.
I've got grandchildren now, and you worry about, you know, them as well. You know, you want them to go out and play rather than be on a tablet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and also looking at screens all day can't be good for you.
No, I don't think it is.
And also in schools now, people can't add up. You're going to a shop, and if you present cash, they go, they look petrified because they don't know what to do. Everything is on a card.
No, that's true.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
You mentioned Brian, and that's the wonderful, amazing Brian May. When did you first meet?
We met 1986, when he was doing the magic tour with the boys. And I was sort of in my second year, I suppose, of EastEnders, towards the end of that year. And we met, and I went to one of their incredible parties, and I became really friendly with Freddie to start with. He sort of said, come and meet my boyfriend, and dragged me off to meet Jim. And then he said, you must come home with me. So we all went back to his place. And then I started to go around there sort of on Sunday mornings. And I remember going around there one Sunday morning, and he went, darling, like that. And I went into the kitchen, which everybody goes to the kitchen, don't they? And he had all the papers spread out on the table. He went, look at you, sweetheart, look. Ooh, it's all about you. Some awful story in the papers, and I was just horrified. And he was laughing, you know, like a drain, because he was used to it, of course. He'd had all that, you know. Suddenly there was me being faced with it. It wasn't a time, But it was great.
So did you get together with Brian then?
No, not really. We sort of met. We met at this party that Fred had had, and I think at subsequent events, and got to know each other. And, the rest is kind of history.
And when did you get married?
We got married. I was 51 when we got married. So that was
That's
great. I thought, I'm 51. There's a good chance it's going to last, you know, because it's quite late. So that was that's 22 years ago.
I was 39 when we got married.
That's a good age.
But we've been together 37 years now.
Congratulations, that's brilliant.
Yeah, amazing.
It is, isn't it? I often look at us sometimes and think, gosh, we've been together all that time. Kind of on and off-ish, but
Did you used to go to all the gigs with him and everything?
In the early days, of course, I went to everything, but not everything. Now, because I kind of feel some of them, you know, I'll go to like maybe the first one and then pop in or maybe see the last one, but I won't go for the whole thing, though, because I've kind of seen it, done it.
You've done that, got the T-shirt.
Fluffy toy, a cupboard full of fluffy toys. But I mean, they are amazing, aren't they? I mean, think that they're still, I mean, the recent tour that they've just finished, I don't know how they got through it at their age, really, I don't. I suddenly realised more clearly, I suppose, than ever before, what a professional my husband is. I mean, he really works at it. He rehearses, he rehearses, he rehearses. He checks everything out. He's constantly looking at it, talking to everybody. I mean, that's why they're so fantastic. All of them are the same. They all write, they all play instruments, they all care about the product that they're making.
I think they care immensely. And don't you think it's their great passion, isn't it?
It is.
And if you're passionate, like you're obviously passionate about acting,
their
music and the way they present themselves, that's why they're so brilliant. Mm.
He's also a brilliant kind of, he collects stereo cards. You know, remember when we were kiddies, you used to get them in the Weetabix packets. They were little cards and you put them in a viewer and they went into 3D.
Oh, my goodness.
They were little baby ones then, but he collects Victorian stereo cards and has written books
for
them.
Oh, my goodness.
So he's got another passion that he's, and also, of course, he works for NASA, does 3D stuff, you know, pictures of their moon landings. Oh. And he's very clever. I don't know what I'm doing
so
with him,
clever.
Really. I mean, I'm a dip brain, and I've got this genius for a husband.
That is so. So, what does he do for NASA? That's amazing.
Well, you know,
I didn't
know
that.
They land probes on various planets.
Yeah.
You know, they launch things into space, which is now littered with junk. But he will, like, when there was the recent one, they sent him all the photographs of the landing, and then he makes them into 3D photographs. I know.
Oh, my goodness.
It looks like you can actually see it standing away from the background.
Oh, yeah.
Very clever.
That's amazing. I never knew that about him. That's amazing.
And he did a book once. A friend of his is a Frenchman. He's keen about stereo cards. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to do a book about crinolines. So Brian and he did it together. And when they launched the book, myself and Bri's two daughters and friends, we all dressed up in crinolines to sort of show them as the part of the launch, and found this dear little place, little Victorian theatre, and we did it there. And it's fascinating, you know, what those women went through in those days. Most of those dresses caught fire because, I mean, massive, massive amount of material in a massively big skirt and petticoat. You only need to brush by a candle, and if it goes up, unless somebody throws you to the floor and, you know, people lay on you to put the fire out.
Oh, my God.
So it was quite a dangerous thing to wear, a crinoline. But they were so beautiful.
Yeah, of course. You know? They were so, but I'd never thought of that. But, of course, they're so big,
massive,
aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
She does interesting things. You know, I mean, I learn things that I like, that little story that I never would have known, you know, that people got caught fire in crinolines. You just don't think about that, do you?
I've never read about that either. That's. If you think about it, it makes absolute sense. The other thing I saw you in that you were brilliant was Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, yes.
It was a great production. Trevor Nunn,
yes,
wasn't it?
It was. I mean, the set was amazing, wasn't it?
Amazing. But the whole production was amazing. I mean, he is brilliant, Trevor, absolutely brilliant. But, and also, it's one of the great musicals. I mean, we must have seen that probably various productions, probably four or five times. And every time that opening song, Tradition, Lee starts crying.
Oh,
it makes him cry. It's so emotional. It is a very, very emotional show,
it is,
isn't it?
And it was lovely.
And the father and the daughters.
And also, it's like, it's not, you know, it's not going to be a happy ending. You know, you kind of know that, don't you? But I worked in that with the lovely Maria Friedman, who we'd worked together before, sort of yonks ago. And so it was really lovely to be working with her again. We shared a dressing room. It was really lovely. That was a blessing of the show for me.
Because you sing. You had a big hit record, didn't you? Wasn't it with the EastEnders?
Yeah, the theme song. I wouldn't call me a singer. I would say that I'm an actress that can carry a tune.
Well, I think you know, if you can carry a tune, you're a singer.
Right. I'll accept it then. Okay.
But it's lovely singing, isn't it?
Don't you love it? Yes. It's such a joyful thing, isn't it? It's like listening. Yeah.
I think everyone should sing, actually.
Yes. Even if you think you've got a rubbish voice, I mean, you should still have a go. My sister sings. I mean, she sings in a choir. They've got a little choir down where she lives. And so she sings a lot. And my mum used to sing. She used to sing with the Forces Band.
In the wartime,
yeah, she used to get up and sing. But then when she got demobbed, they said, oh, we're going to go pro, you know, would you like to, you know, join us, Anne? And she said, oh, I don't know. She said, I have to have a drink before I get up and sing. She said, I don't know whether that's a good idea. So she went on cold one night. She went on without having had a glass of, and she hit a bum note and it put her off forever. And so she didn't join the band.
Oh, what a shame. Yeah.
But it's kind of given me a bit of a nervousness about singing. I mean, I'm fine if I'm in character. It doesn't bother me because it's just an extension of the text. But if people ask me to just get up, go on stage and just sing a song for no other reason than the song is a pretty song, then that fills me with abject fear, which I've inherited.
But I think there's something very, very good for your soul about. I mean, not to sing professionally, but just to everyone should just sing every day, even if you can't sing in tune.
Because
it does. I absolutely love it. And I just think, and enjoy it like your sister, join a choir.
Yeah. I think you should.
Must be lovely singing in a choir, actually, hearing all those harmonies.
Yeah, and you've got backup, haven't you, with your mates?
Yeah.
But I think you should sing every day, dance every day, and laugh every day if you can.
Excellent. There you are. You heard it from Anita Dobson. Do that.
Laughter is so important, don't you think?
Oh, tell me. Oh, my God.
In this world, if we don't laugh, well, we truly are dead as a race.
No, I agree. I mean, we all have days that aren't so good, but if you can find a bit of humour. Oh, you know, Lee makes me laugh a lot. I mean, I love him, but he does make me laugh still.
That's great. That's great.
I mean, it's silly, but it's very, very important.
Yeah.
So how did you guys cope through the terrible COVID couple of years? Were you in London?
We were in London. It was deeply challenging because Brian had a heart attack and he had sciatica and then he had a hemorrhage. So
I was
Florence Nightingale, and it's a role that I am not castable for. I realise now. I did my best. I valiantly became La Pompia from one of those Lorca plays, you know, the sort of old housekeeper that plods around, you know, bringing food and various books and whatever for the patient. But it was very hard.
So did the COVID give him a heart attack?
No, he just suddenly, he sort of was laying on the floor and said, darling, I think I'm having a heart attack. I said,
oh my God, how terrifying.
It must be the physio, because he does exercise. It must be the exercises. You've just overdone it. You've strained something. You can't.
Yeah.
I said, no, trust me, I think it's a heart attack. And you know that moment when you think, I'm a capable woman, I'll know what to do. I just went into shock for about 30 seconds. I was like, what? And then I thought, doctor, I've got to call the doctor. So I rang our doctor.
Yeah.
Luckily, he lives locally. Oh, he did when we were in London. And he shot round and took him away and did loads of tests. And then the next day he came back and he said, I'm afraid I've got to take him into hospital. And they did. They took him in and put 3 stents in his heart.
It's unbelievable. And he'd had no warning signs?
No. It was such
that
a shock. It was terrifying. I mean, I never want to go through that again.
And this was during the COVID. Everyone was in lockdown.
And we went to the hospital, of course, masked up to the nines. And there was obviously everyone was masked and nobody was allowed to go in. And I couldn't go in with them. And then the doctor said, well, Lady Anita, used to call me Lady Anita. Lady Anita will come in and watch too. And I went, I don't want to watch my husband having a heart procedure. No, I'll wait out here. I thought, no, I can't.
But then
he relayed it to me. He sent me a little text saying, first stent has gone in satisfactorily. Second one about to go in, taking a little longer. And then I heard nothing. And you're sitting there gripping the armchair.
Oh, my goodness.
It was terrifying. But
terrifying.
He was brilliant. And he recovered. He's very strong, I realise now. He's very brave.
Yeah. And he's fine, all recovered.
Yeah.
And
does his exercises religiously every day without fail.
And did he have to go on a special diet or anything?
Well, we eat pretty healthily. We don't eat meat. And so the doctor said, you know, obviously these are the things you should eat that are good for you, and these are things probably that are not
that good you shouldn't. For you.
Yeah. So yeah, he started to watch that, and they give you tablets to take, and he said exercise as much as you know is good for you, and he gave him a trainer that would come in and help him to so he knew not to exercise too much, because of course that could be
a problem too.
But yeah, he's been amazing. And to do that tour, that long tour, running, and he was on stage for what, 2 hours, 20 minutes nonstop, and he didn't have any breaks. I just think that's heroic, isn't it? That's almost.
It is. Yeah. That's amazing.
It's godlike, isn't it?
So what, during lockdown, I mean, we just moved into a place in the country, so we had lots to do, because when you move into a house, there's lots to do, and we had boxes to unpack. So that kind of kept, I mean, the hardest thing for me was not seeing our kids and our grandkids. Mm. I found that it was horrible. But, I mean, we talk on Zoom every day and everything, but it's not quite the same.
No.
And my daughter had just given birth 3 weeks before to her second baby, a little baby boy. So I got to meet him and hold him a couple of times, and then I didn't see him for 3.5 months, and that was really hard. Yeah. And I couldn't help her. You know, when you have a baby, it's nice to have mum around to help and just get some sleep, quite honestly. But I couldn't even do that, because we weren't allowed to. So we were lucky with that. Were you in London through all of lockdown?
We were in London throughout lockdown. Interesting enough, we've just moved to the country too. So we've left London, which is a bit of a shock to this Stepney gal who's vowed she'd never leave the smell of diesel fumes. But we are now ensconced in the country.
Oh, so you've moved.
So we're surrounded by boxes like you were, yeah.
Oh, okay. This has just happened. Okay. What part? I mean, you don't have to tell me specifically, but what part of the country? North, south?
Sorry.
Devon, Cornwall. Oh, okay. Oh, well, we're in Sussex, so.
Oh, lovely.
So you've done, I mean, you've done many, many things on stage. Is that your biggest passion, being on stage?
It was. I mean, I cut my teeth on stage work, and I've done loads of stuff from Hello Dolly to Hamlet and back again, you know. But and I thought that would be it for me, but I must say, as I've got older now, and of course living a little bit further out, it's harder to get in and out of town, as I'm sure you know. Mm. So I think probably more television now, unless it's something that really rocks my boat.
Also, don't you think, you know, 8 shows a week is hard, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, at my age. Yeah.
I haven't done half as much as you on stage, but I have done a few stage things. But I, you know, I was much younger, and it's a killer then, let alone, I mean, I loved it, but I don't know whether 8 shows a week now is, you think,
too much.
That's hard.
Yeah. And it's also the fact that it's relentless, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, wonderful though it is, you know, if it's a long run, it is exhausting.
It is. And also you have to, well, I did, the only way I could do it, you plan your whole life and your day around the show, don't you? What you eat,
exactly.
When you eat, how you sleep, where you sleep, because the show is the be all and end all of your 24 hours.
Yeah, it rules your life, doesn't it?
Does.
Which was fine when I was younger. I loved it because that's all I wanted to do, eat, sleep, drink, theatre and acting. But now that, you know, you've got, and as you get older, I thought as you got older, things slowed down and life got easier. It's not. It's even faster than it ever was.
It is.
Every day you wake up in the morning and you skeeter through the day to the end of the day and think, that's another day over. And then suddenly you get up again and off you go again. I don't know why it's so busy. I blame technology. I think
we're blaming technology for everything.
Yeah, for everything. Because it does make you move faster. Everybody wants an answer quickly and things happen quickly.
No, it's true.
They?
But going back to theatre, Leo always says, and I've experienced it a few times, but not as much as you two have. But he said the lovely thing about doing theatre is that as a group, you become like a family.
I find that touring now, when you've got a nice house, you don't want to go away from home, do you? And also, that's really, really tiring because the travelling is tiring as well. Yeah,
it is.
So I find that's something that I probably would be reluctant to do.
Yeah, it is. And it takes you away from home. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've always been a homebody, but I'm much more of a homebody now.
Really?
And I love cooking. So I love being at home. I love cooking. Yeah. Just having evenings at home around the telly and just doing ordinary, normal things. And if you're on tour, you can't do that, can you?
No, you can't. Look at you, an icon. Gosh, I remember you back in the day, little twigs. You were amazing.
I was a very funny little thing.
Yeah, but you were a fashion icon. I mean, listen, I'm mad about clothes. So, of course, you know, watched you with avid interest.
Thank you. No, it was very an interesting time.
I can imagine. And
you did Strictly, right?
I did.
When was that?
It must be about 11, getting on for 12 years ago, maybe.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, certainly over 10. Yeah, must be about 11 years ago. They asked me about 3 times. And I kept saying no because I thought, no, I don't like the intrusion into your private life, you know.
Yeah.
But the third time they asked me, my best friend said to me, why are you saying no? And I said, well, I don't want to make a fool of myself. She said, at your age, do you care? And I said, you know what? You're absolutely right. I'm going to do it. So I did. I made the decision. And I did it, and oh my God, the clothes.
They
had to throw me out of BBC when I went to look at the clothes because I tried everything on. They said, look, you've got to go now. There's other people. You've tried nearly everything we've got. Off you go. You know, I loved it so much.
Oh, that's so fun. Yeah. But they must make the clothes to fit you because you're very petite, aren't you? So, I mean.
Ish.
Oh, you are. You're in very good shape.
But
isn't it really, really? I've known a few people who've done it. Isn't it really hard? The rehearsing and the
Especially if you're not a dancer, which I'm not. I never trained. You know, I love the idea of it, and I love dancers, and have a great respect and admiration for them. They're the backbone of every musical, and I suppose I'd always wished that I had trained, and I'm a good mover, I was in my day.
She's a little mover.
And people used to say to me, like if I did a musical, they said, do you think you could do this? And I go, I don't know, I'll have a go. And so often I would find myself doing sort of things that you'd never imagine yourself doing, you know. So what I did, I parked my career as such and I just gave it over to Strictly and thought, I'm going to pretend I'm a dancer for the duration.
Brilliant. And so you were taking on an acting role?
In a way, yes. Yeah. Because if I didn't do very well 1 week, I remember Craig, Revel Horwood, would say, well, you acted it so well. And I thought, yeah, that's because I'm an actress.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And it had to be a part. But I was so fortunate that I got partnered with Robin Windsor. I remember feeling so thrilled because they sort of try you out with everybody. They have a sort of dance thing.
Oh, do they? Oh, that's interesting.
You know, put different partners together. And we just clicked as people, you know. So for the whole first half of the series, we just laughed. We just had fun. And we got on. We had a chemistry, I think, which is, you know, it's not inevitable that you'll find that with every part in anything.
That's true.
Acting as in musicals. So, yeah, it was great. But it gets very competitive about halfway through. And I'm not really.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, because how much do you want to win? And I say, well, I'm not really bothered. I'm just here for the dancing. I just want to have fun, you know, and dance and do as well as I can. I was sad not to leave with Robin. When I did go, I was sad I didn't leave with Robin.
Yeah, because didn't he get injured or something?
Yeah, he did. We did Wembley and he had some kind of infection, he thought, on his knee, and it blew up like a
bomb.
And so for the next one, I had to dance with somebody else, with Brendan, who I hitherto didn't know terribly well, and he's a brilliant dancer.
Brilliant, yeah.
But it was a different chemistry, you know, different kind of, and then it was after that I went. So I had to sort of sit on the sofa with them both, bless them, say goodbye to both of them.
Aww.
And it was sad that I didn't actually finish with Robin. I think he was sad as well. he kept saying to me, try and get through this one so that we can do one more, you know.
Oh.
It wasn't to be.
Oh. But I'm glad you had fun, because I've had other friends who've done it who didn't really enjoy it very much.
Well, it is tough. I mean, it didn't change my life. Like, you know, people said to me, this is going to change your life. It didn't change my life. I just went back to my job, you know, my real job kind of thing. But it made me realise that it's all very well to look at dancers and think it looks like they're having so much fun and it's easy. It is.
I've always said, I mean, I did a big musical in New York many years ago.
I remember.
The dancer, I always say that dancers in musicals are the most underpraised and underpaid in our profession, because that our dancers were, they were magical. They could do things that I couldn't even dream of. I mean, I can tap dance a bit, and I did, but they were extraordinary. I mean, and they work so hard, and they are underappreciated and definitely underpaid.
I agree. The boyfriend.
Well, that was a film.
Yeah, you were having that.
Yeah. But and I'd learned to tap for that. Pardon?
What was the show you did in New York?
It was called My One and Only. It was
together
show with Gershwin Music that Tommy Tune starred in with me and directed and everything. But I loved our dancers. I mean, they all became my friends. But it just amazed me that they are always so under.
Yeah. But they're always happy, aren't they? Because they're dancing. And as we were saying earlier, it is a joyful
Absolutely.
Thing to do. So they're
Absolutely.
Always happy. Lovely bunch
they
to be
are.
Around. I mean, just...
Yeah. Anyway, it's been... I'm going to let you go soon, because otherwise we're going to be on here for like 3 hours.
I know. I'm going to miss you. What time tomorrow?
That's so funny. Anyway, it's been really lovely.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to have met you and to have had time with you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely lovely. And hopefully we'll see each other soon.
I hope so too.
Go and have a sing song with your husband.
I'll tell him you said so.
I will.
Right, take care of yourself, lovely.
Lots of love. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, that was such a lovely chat with Anita. She's a really nice lady. I love the fact that we were born the same year. Good year, 1949. Anyway, I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as I enjoyed talking to Anita. Really fun. Okay, I'll see you soon. Bye. If this is your first time listening to Tea with Twiggy, please do remember to tell your friends. You can also subscribe for free on your podcast app and listen to all my previous guests. If you want to connect with me, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter at Twiggy, or you can find me on Instagram at Twiggy Lawson. My thanks go to all the people that have helped this podcast happen. Many thanks to James Carroll and all the team at North Bank Talent Management. Thanks to all the team at Stripped Media, including Ben Williams, who edits the show, my producer Kobe Omanaka, and executive producers Tom Wally and Dave Corkery. The music you can hear now is my version of Waterloo Sunset by The Kinks. If you'd like to hear the whole song, you can find it and all the other songs I've recorded on iTunes and Spotify. So check it out. I look forward to you joining me for my next episode. So see you then. Bye.
Just heard a Stripped Media production.